We tracked, basically, yes. We sort of looked at it separately. You have the time between enrollment and when we did the interview, and then the time between when we did the interview and when the patient died. So there was a little loss to follow up in that second arm because we didn't track, you know, when people were discharged. We didn't contact them for follow-up interviews to see if they still had help at that point. But we did find associations with the use of formal help, and there's a little evidence to suggest that people with formal help services tended to be people who were in hospice sort of over the long haul. There's a very, you know, slight, statistically insignificant association with dementia diagnosis as well. So that we think that's one of the more interesting findings to come out of this study. Informal help tended to be around for the short term, sort of immediately after hospice enrollment, and that tended to drop off after the first month, and only at the six-month mark or so was that replaced with formal help services.
Alzheimer's diagnosis.
So we did not assess FAST score. The diagnosis data are all based on nurse reports. So basically, I would call up the nurse and say, what is this patient's hospice diagnosis? So why they're in hospice. So everyone on that list that was listed with a diagnosis of dementia, you know, it would be more appropriate to say end-stage dementia, presumably. So now we're going to switch gears a little bit. Talk about data that wasn't collected from caregivers. These are hospice approaches to helping caregivers with medication management for home hospice patients. Another pilot survey, still in Chicagoland. Still no disclosures. We would once again like to acknowledge all of our co-investigators, as well as our funding organizations and our five participating hospices. By way of introduction, many older adults remain at home as they age and as they near the end of their lives. Many of them have to rely on family caregivers for medication management. We've seen that this can be very complicated and that it is important for relieving suffering at the end of life. We've also seen that caregivers report feeling unprepared and have other unmet needs when it comes to medication management. Furthermore, many lack additional informal and formal help that they may also need. There is previous literature showing that hospice providers are considered the key teachers and supporters, but less than 60% of caregivers receive medication management assistance from hospice. Furthermore, there is very little in the way of standards for medication management, for hospice assistance for caregivers, specifically for medication management. Unfortunately, this means the quality can vary wildly. There are no clinical guidelines to consult, and it makes it hard for researchers like us to compare programs and methods. Prior work we did in this area proposed a conceptual understanding of how hospice providers support caregivers. We reported five domains: establishing trust, providing medication information, encouraging self-confidence, offering direct medication assistance, and assessing caregiver understanding and performance. However, our prior study did not assess how common these approaches are. Therefore, we set out to do that in this study. We wanted to quantify as well as further characterize hospice providers' clinical approaches to helping these caregivers manage medications for patients who are receiving end-of-life care in a private residence. Our setting is the same, five Chicago-based hospices, but we should note for this slide we have added that there are 14 interdisciplinary teams between these hospices. That is because we self-administered surveys for 12 of these teams during their on-site weekly meetings. The surveys were anonymous. We surveyed only paid employees providing clinical services, and the team leaders reported 85% attendance. The survey itself consisted of mainly closed-ended items, a visual analog scale from 1 to 10 rated the importance of medication management, two six-item Likert scales, ranging from very frequently to never, assessed first how often the provider had encountered caregivers who were having problems with medication management, and second, how often the provider, him or herself, had difficulty teaching and supporting caregivers with medication management. We then asked a series of four-item Likert scales from not at all to a great extent, asking how much they believed they would benefit from additional resources in each of the five key skill domains that we've talked about on both of my previous talks this morning. In addition, the survey included two open-ended items. The first asked about assessment approaches, that is, evidence respondents looked for to assess whether a caregiver is having medication management problems. The second open-ended question asked providers about their teaching and support approaches, or tricks of the trade, that they found effective to teach or support caregivers in managing medications. To stimulate ideas, we asked the respondents to think in particular of difficult cases. For our closed-ended items, our analysis consisted of frequency distributions and Fisher's exact tests to assess variation by hospice agency, discipline, time working in hospice, and time at that particular agency. Our open-ended responses were grouped by topic codes into emergent themes. Quickly describing our sample, we had 98 hospice providers, 74 nurses, 11 social workers, 7 chaplains, and 6 physicians. And you can see the distribution by study site on the screen there. The average time working in hospice was 73 months, and the average time at that particular agency was 57.8 months. 2/3 of respondents rated ensuring proper medication management as a 10, most important in delivering quality hospice care. However, it should be noted that these importance ratings varied significantly by hospice agency. 1/3 of respondents had frequently or very frequently encountered caregivers who had problems managing medications. These percentages varied by professional discipline. Moving on to our assessment approaches, two themes emerged. The first we termed retrospective warning signs. These were indicators that a medication management problem had already occurred, or had potential to occur unless there was immediate action on the part of the nurse. The easiest example of this would be pill reconciliation, or counting pills in the pill box to see if a medication had not been given on a certain day when it was supposed to. The second theme that emerged was prospective provider assessments. These were assessments regularly initiated by providers before a potential medication management problem could occur. For example, probing a caregiver's understanding before they attempted a particular task. This is a Venn diagram we constructed to illustrate the distribution of the various types of approaches across respondents. It should be noted that, unfortunately, 20% left this question blank on their surveys. 38% reported only retrospective assessment approaches. 10% reported only prospective assessment approaches. And 32% reported approaches from both. The most common retrospective warning sign reported in this survey by 51% of respondents was a sudden decline in patient health, anything from increased pain, distress, or symptom severity, and so forth. You can see the quote on the screen there. Discrepancies in the caregiving process was reported by 45% of respondents and is the next most common. These included things like pill counts, medication reconciliation, reviewing medication logs with the caregiver, and not needing to reorder medications as often as they should. For the prospective provider assessments, the most common approach, reported by 29% of the sample, was assessing the caregiver's emotional state. This could include confusion or stress, fear or misconceptions regarding certain classes of medications, and finally, poor attitude towards the end of life, unrealistic expectations, or denial about the patient's prognosis. You can see an example quote on the screen. 16% of providers reported determining an information deficiency, the next most common assessment in this theme. This included approaches such as quizzing the caregiver or asking if they had any questions in general, as well as asking the professor to return demonstrate a procedure the hospice provider had shown them. Sorry.
We're getting insulted.
Provider. I promise I was thinking provider. Moving on now to the teaching and support approaches. Three themes emerged here. The first was teaching aimed at increasing knowledge. This included educational approaches to improve caregivers' knowledge of proper medication administration procedures. The next was more direct support of the medication management process, and this typically took one of two forms, either facilitating a caregiver's current practices or modifying or otherwise simplifying the practice so as to alleviate caregiver burden. The final theme to emerge was counseling aimed at overcoming attitudinal barriers, such as alleviating anxiety over performance or fear of certain classes of medications. Excuse me. Again, another Venn diagram. Regrettably, 12% did not report anything for this question. you can see a slight emphasis towards teaching here. 21% reported only teaching approaches, 14% only care process, 14% only counseling. Interestingly, a high percentage reported both teaching and care process, but otherwise the numbers are a little on the small side. Only 6% of our sample reported approaches from all three areas. For teaching approaches, the most common, reported by 37% of our sample, was supplementing visits with ad hoc, non-standardized written materials. These could take just about any form, from typed or handwritten notes, to charts or diagrams, or even to posters that a caregiver could hang in a living area or otherwise easily accessible place. These teaching approaches also included repeating information or having the caregiver repeat it back, demonstrating or returning the demonstration, using simple terms to describe medications instead of technical names, teaching by analogy, or asking the physician to explain medications and relying on the physician's perceived authority. For supporting the medication management process, the most common approach was facilitating an existing process, reported by 42% of the sample. This included activities such as setting up or filling pill boxes, pre-filling syringes, helping with medication logs, directly sorting or organizing different medications, and even making telephone calls to remind the caregiver to give medications. 9% reported modifying an existing process. These included such things as simplifying the regimen, modifying administration instructions, or delegating the medication manager role to a single caregiver in multi-caregiver households. For the counseling approaches, the most common, reported by 11% of our sample, was focusing on the health benefits of medications, for example, pain management. This also included encouragement, addressing myths around certain kinds of medications, sharing previous experiences with other caregivers, suggesting a trial run of a given medication, and reminding caregivers about past discussions with the patient, for example, goals of care discussions. Interestingly, 2% of our sample reported the use of negative messaging, namely, reviewing the worst scenario that could happen if caregivers do not comply with medications. To wrap up the survey results, 28% of our sample reported frequently or very frequently experiencing difficulty with teaching or supporting caregivers in managing medications. Additionally, sizable percentages reported that they would benefit to a great extent from additional resources, ranging from 47% believing they would benefit to a great extent from resources to help caregivers coordinate with hospice and other caregivers, all the way down to 37% who believe they would benefit from resources in responding to patient needs. So, what does this all mean? First off, we can tell that medication management is rated among the most important aspects of hospice care. We also know that caregivers frequently have difficulty with it, and that providers themselves frequently have difficulty teaching or supporting caregivers in it. Furthermore, there is not a lot of consistency in the way these approaches were described across providers. There aren't a lot of standardized or evidence-based clinical tools. There aren't any consensus guidelines for them to go off of. Finally, sizable proportions of providers believe they would benefit from additional resources. Limitations of this study: another small, non-probabilistic sample from a single geographic area. While the sample is multidisciplinary, most are nurses. Additionally, no caregivers or patients were surveyed for this part of our study. Responses might also have been influenced by survey conditions and time constraints at IDT meetings. Any of you who have ever been to one of those knows how chaotic and compressed they can get. These are self-reports that may under or overestimate actual practice as well. Nonetheless, these findings can provide preliminary insights for future intervention, in particular in-service training curricula for providers, and more importantly, evidence-based tools to support provider practice. Some of these reported approaches, such as negative messaging, need further investigation to evaluate their effectiveness and appropriateness for use among caregivers of hospice patients. Finally, and most importantly, future research should attempt to link these approaches to clinical needs, which may well dictate the use of and appropriateness of various approaches presented here.